they have it, then half right. Your best life now, it's said, isn't it? But no, your best life then. There's a little word that they miss out here. You see what it is? Will.
Welcome to the God-Centered Life with Josh Moody. Our series is called Steps to Blessing. Step number three is believe. Matthew, the fifth chapter, and verse number five. Josh Moody, senior pastor of College Church in Wheaton, Illinois. My name is Todd Besteed. Thanks for joining us for our study today. Touching on a truth that often gets tossed aside, kind of baby with the bathwater style as we evaluate what we're listening to. Can we say that there are typically elements of truth in teaching that nonetheless goes astray? There's always some element. You say they're half right, your best life now. Know your best life then.
Right.
So it seems like there's always some element of truth.
Yeah. Well, you've got to find something that will appeal. So you've got to find, like, oh, that seems like that's right. But then you take it in a slightly different direction. That's the art of false teaching, I guess.
The art of false teaching. Josh, you call this the most radical beatitude. Hmm. Why is that?
Well, blessed are the meek. The idea that the meek shall inherit the earth is astonishing.
Terrific. Let's jump in. Unpack this fifth chapter of the book of Matthew, verse 5. Here's Josh.
So verse 1 of chapter 5. Now, when he, that is Jesus, saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Well now, world dominion is not normally thought to come about in this kind of way, is it? I mean, if you want to get the whole earth, you're more likely to think, aren't you, of these days, of conquest and aggression, or maybe subtle subterfuge, or some combination of the two. Money is another thing. If you want to get a house, you need an obscene amount of money, though rather less this year than last year, it seems. What would you need if you want to inherit the whole earth in terms of dollars? Perhaps a really friendly bank manager? Or how about looking another way? Survival of the fittest, anyone? How does our culture, our modern science tell us that we got to the top of the pile over every other living organism? By being meek? I don't think so. By being stronger, smarter, better, meaner, fitter than everyone and everything else. And so everywhere and in every situation, there's this idea that the way to get what you want is to grab it. Finders, keepers, losers, weepers. And that is the way the world works. Or is it? What we have here is surely the most radical of all of these beatitudes, don't you think? I really think it is. Okay, so maybe I can understand that this thing which sounds sort of religious, the kingdom of heaven, can come to those who really realize they need it. They are poor in spirit. Okay, maybe I can get that. And maybe I can get it that comfort comes to those who not only know that they're sinners, but actually repent of their sin too. They say sorry and mean it. That all makes sense that they mourn in that way. I can see that's how God works, but the world? Nah, come on. And yet, Jesus says, Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Well, let's face up to it. Was he wrong? So I'm going to try and pull out how radical I think this teaching of Jesus is here. Not in the traditional way from the beginning of the verse to the end, but from reverse to the beginning. So in reverse. First then, I want you to understand that Jesus wants you to inherit the earth. Surely must be what he's saying. That's right. This is, I think, physical. This is not the kingdom of heaven. This is not spiritual. This is not about how you feel or state of mind. This is matter. This is the world. This is the earth. Now, in case you're beginning to start to worry and think that I'm sounding like Joel Osteen or something like that, I want to tell you that all those prosperity gospel guys have it half right. And of course, the other half's pretty important. They're right in this sense. Yes, God does want to bless us. I mean, can't you see? He says it over and over again, doesn't he? Blessed, 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 right? It's not frozen chosen. We're all kind of like, all button up. You know what I mean? It's not negative and nasty. God, half right, you see, it's half right. God does want to bless you. He does. That's what the Beatitudes are all about. You see, all this stuff in the Old Testament about the land is there, and that's all in the background to what Jesus is saying now. And they have it then half right. Your best life now, it's said, isn't it? But no, your best life then. There's a little word that they miss out here. You see what it is? Will. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Now, I'm not saying there's nothing now. There is. But that's not what Jesus is talking about now. He's talking about the future. He's talking about the new heavens and the new earth, the home of righteousness, the physical new creation, which all those who have trusted in Jesus will get to enjoy for all eternity. And that, if we've repented of our sins and put our trust in Jesus, that we will get to enjoy. But you see, if you just change that word, if you just put do in place of will, blessed are the meek, for they do inherit the earth, well, then it's all gone pear-shaped, isn't it? I think actually, you know, in terms of being half right, as I say, the half wrong is pretty important. I think actually you have the cruelest doctrine on the face of the planet. For what happens when you don't get healed of cancer? What happens then, hey? You don't have enough faith? What happens when life does stink? Has it all gone wrong? Does God not love you? Where is God when bad things happen to good people? As they do on occasions. Well, if they had the Bibles, just read down a little. If you've got a Bible again, I hope. You just read down to verse 10 and verse 11. Can you see that? Well, there's a blessing for that too. What does it say? It says, rejoice and be glad when you get persecuted. And when people, you know, assassinate your character through verbal assaults, I'm interpreting what Jesus is saying there. But that's what he's talking about, isn't it? When you're persecuted, when they say all kinds of nasty things about you, when people assassinate you through your character, verbal assaults, and all that, that's going to happen. It's not all your best life now. Of course not. Even if you live the most comfortable existence here, there is still death to come. And the suffering that will go with that. And I've seen people on their deathbed. It's not easy. Of course not. But you can still rejoice. Why? Because of your best life then. The Christian facing death has only joy in their eyes. It's coming, and that makes everything here worthwhile, everything worth working for and trying for and putting your passionate energy in for. Will. Best life then. So Jesus is putting our focus there, and then, because of that, we can have joy now. We are immune from life's ups and downs, and we really apply our faith. And of course, we all do have ups and downs in our immaturity that we all have, you and I. But we have the possibility of being immune from life's ups and downs. This life will go quickly. If you're young, you may think life is going slow. Well, you wait a few years, and suddenly it will start to speed up, right? The older people, yeah. And in a moment too, we'll all be in the grave, frankly. And then there will be the new heaven and the new earth. And if you get to inherit it, well, then everything is worth it here, isn't it? Everything.
More on this radical beatitude in just a moment, but first a reminder that our website, GodCenteredLife.org, has resources that we've compiled just for you. We have a brand new offer that we'll tell you about in a moment, and we'd love for you to swing by and connect with us there. That web address again, GodCenteredLife.org. Right now, though, back into the fifth chapter of the book of Matthew, here's Josh.
But then, of course, the question is, if that is all the case, how do you get it? Is it command and conquer? How do you get that freedom from life's vain show? How do you get that joy that can't be taken away from you by a date gone bad or a job gone sour? Or how do you have this pervading sense of transcendent spiritual life in the face of everything? How do you get this land that Jesus is talking about, the earth that he wants us to have, the world dominion to come? And if the promise was surprising, world dominion, the one, of course, to whom it is promised is even more surprising, isn't it? So say it's in reverse. We're looking at the beginning of the verse now. Blessed are the meek. It is to the meek. The weak, the nice, the wobbly, the indecisive, the people who can't stand up and be counted for constantly navel-gazing, the humiliated and the humiliating. It's the losers, apparently, not the winners who get to win. Is that right? Well, how are we going to try and understand it? Well, let's try and think of some of those who were said to be meek. Think of Moses. You may remember he was said to be the meekest man on the face of the earth. Do you remember that? You ever ask yourself what made him so meek? He was certainly no pushover, was he? It takes some chutzpah to lead a massive conglomerate out of slavery into the desert, doesn't it? So what are we talking about here? You can see it in Abraham, who offered Lot the choice of which land, important, which land, earth, which land to inherit, and just let him choose meekly. You can see it in Paul. Paul, of course, very smart, but derided, for instance, by the Corinthian church. And he's tough, is Paul, so it's not weak, this thing, at all, is it? He's a tough guy. But still he loves and is pained for them, the Corinthian church, not finding them a pain. You know, he is meek, he is gentle. Most of all, we find it in Jesus, don't we? Who said, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest for your souls. But it's not just being humble before God. It's being meek towards each other, which is another step, really. Say you come up to me afterwards and tell me that you think I've sinned in some specific way. How do I react then? It doesn't for this purpose matter whether you are right or wrong. What matters is whether I am meek. And the meek person is not thrown off balance. He has settled on his eternal inheritance, and he knows who he is anyway. And it's like water off a duck's back. But most of us aren't like that at all. You see, it's much more than simply being nice. It certainly isn't weak, is it? We've seen that, haven't we? Was Jesus weak? Did the Pharisees think he was weak? Did the money changers think he was weak when he threw them out of the temple? Jesus was very strong. It takes great strength to give up your life for your friends. No, meekness, whatever it is not weakness at all. Very far from it, in fact. But nor is it just being nice. Some people are born nice. You know what I mean? They just have wonderful temperaments. They're so hard to rattle. Some people, of course, just seem nice, but really, they're just lazy. They don't care very much. They don't want to do very much. They don't rattle anyone else's cage, unless you want to get something done. But there are people who are born kind of nice. But that's not what we're talking about. That's a natural thing. In a family, you can have a brother who's nice, and then you can have the black sheep of the family. It's not about being nice. Some dogs are nice. Jesus isn't talking about that. This is something of a great supernatural and spiritual character that can only come about by the work of God. Now, remember this Sermon on the Mount and these Beatitudes are not morals for good and proper living. Jesus demands that we are perfect in this sermon. This isn't just a list of rules and how to be a great Christian. None of us are perfect. Of course, that's the point of the Sermon on the Mount. It reveals these Beatitudes, how far short we are of what God wants from us and how much we need his work in our lives. It's to drive us to our knees and say, oh yes, God, I need you. I want you. I can see now. I need your grace. This meekness then is a response to that. It's a deeply spiritual phenomenon that comes out of our assurance of God and who he is, and our certainty that we have him, and therefore really not much matters besides once we see that. So what is meekness? Well, the best definition I've come across for it is this: power under control. That's meekness. You know, in ancient times, a horse was described as meek if it had been trained. It could be a war horse, but it was no longer wild. It had strength. It was going off to war. But now it was trained and ready to go. It was then meek. It is this lowliness, yes, this humility, yes, but it's not a humiliation, not a groveling. It is having been trained by God to be ready for what he has for us, the whole world dominion in time to come. So are you meek? That is, are you a trained disciple of Jesus, or are you still wild? Are you ready for battle? Are you a raw recruit still in boot camp and refusing to learn from what God is bringing into your life to be ready for the next stage of this great campaign that he has for you, as you command and conquer the whole world as a meek person, humble before each other with God as your leader? That's the point, you see. A meek person has been trained by God. They are concerned with God. They are no longer frightened by every little noise. You can look on adversity and on riches and realize it's not really about either of them. You have a far greater reward coming, that of devotional connection to God and a whole universe to explore, a whole world, the earth to live in and rejoice in. And so now, in the midst of whatever it is you might be going through, you have this meekness that means you are blessed above all men and women. Power under control. Of course, most of us are more like a 15-year-old boy who's still trying to learn how to deal with his new, very big, strong muscles. In times past, you could grab someone and pat them on the back and they not feel it much. Now there's all this strength and energy coursing through his veins, and he's got to learn how to control it. That's what a meek person has done. He has learned how to control it. They've still got all the strength, but it's now channeled in a certain direction. It is focused. It is intent on achieving certain goals and objectives. It's like a war horse standing calmly in the midst of the battle. Of course, that's what Moses had. He was prince of Egypt. He could have had anything, but he was trained by his adversity, by God. And so he left all that for the sake of the eternal reward to come. He was meek. Hudson Taylor had it, the great missionary to China. Knowing he would face many trials of his faith, he determined to find out what it was like to walk by faith. So while still at home, he tried trusting God for a few things, some practical things, some small amounts of money, and for basic subsistence, to find out and discover what it was really like to live by faith, so that when he was really there in China as a missionary, he would have proved God in his own experience. He was not mild-mannered in that sense. He was a great, strong, pioneering, drivey missionary, but he was meek. Of course, Jesus did not have to learn this in a natural sense. He was perfect, and so had it naturally, as it were, in his own divine incarnate nature. But it was not then acquired in that way. Yet Jesus perfectly illustrates it in that though he was equal with God, he did not consider equality with God something to grasp, but made himself nothing and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. That's meek. It's not weak. It's not nice. It's power under control. For a higher purpose, the glory of God and the salvation of people. And of course, none of this is a characteristic that even the church knows much about these days. We are taught to be self-assertive, to be self-confident, to be thrusting and pushing and aiming and pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps. And we think the opposite of that is weak and pale and useless and timid and generally a pushover. But here we have something different altogether. The master has come home. His servants wait on his table. He is the one who sets the agenda. He is the one in control. They are made to do his bidding. They are his, and they find their fulfillment in him. He longs to bless them with life and life to the full. They are in a training program. And each of their abilities, their natural gifts, their supernatural graces are being fashioned according to his plan for a purpose, for God's glory and their good. They are being made meek. It's like a boy who loves sports. He's got natural ability. He can run fast and jump high and shoot a mean basketball. He's tall as well. There is bags of potential, but then there's his temperament. Sometimes he's lazy. He can't get up in the morning to train. Sometimes he loses his control when a person on the opposite team teases him. And he's not a team player. He plays like he's Michael Jordan. He's good, but even Jordan was good because he made others around him play well. He hasn't got it. He's got ability, oh sure, but he hasn't been trained yet. He's not meek. So look around you. This is your team. If you're a Christian here this evening, this is the group that you are to be working together with, praying with, supporting and fighting the spiritual battle alongside as one body. And we've got to learn to do that. We've got to learn to appreciate other people's gifts without getting so excited about them that you make other people jealous without getting jealous yourself. You've got to be able to be at peace with who you are, be happy in your own skin. You've got to have a clear sense of why you're here and what you're about, of telling others about Jesus. You've got to be a team player, and you've got to be someone who takes care of himself, who gets into the Bible and prays and seeks God with all his heart. You've got to be meek. And when we are, then the blessing comes. The sense of freedom and joy and peace and purpose, all from the realization of who our master is and what he has done for us, and that we are riding into battle with him to fight the world, the flesh, and the devil, and that nothing can separate us from his love. So we need not fear, we need not fail, we need not fret. Look at it like this. The meek person is the free person. His or her inheritance is secure. You can take nothing from her. She has everything. Christ is hers. God is hers. The universe is hers. A paycheck. Going to inherit the earth. A comment, positive or negative. How she looks. I mean, she's going to inherit the earth. How much she weighs. Going to inherit the earth. What his gifts are or are not. He's going to inherit the earth. How much she or he knows. All these things are insignificant compared to the surpassing greatness of what will be. And that frees up the present. And that brings the joy. That brings the blessing, knowing the internal inheritance of the new heaven and the new earth with Christ Jesus as your Lord.
That's Josh Moody, and this is The God-Centered Life. What will be? Live your best life then. Great takeaways from that. And the war horse, Josh, such a vivid picture of meekness, strong, ready, trained, but calm. That's the present, and then there's also the future inheritance. Fantastic stuff. Thank you so much. Well, we want to welcome you to December. Wow, where's this year going so fast, huh? A new offer coming your way. It's from Tim Keller. It's called Hidden Christmas, The Surprising Truth Behind the Birth of Christ. Pastor and New York Times bestselling author Tim Keller presents the perfect gift for the Christmas holiday, a profoundly moving and intellectually provocative examination of the Nativity story. It is a gift to you from us, but it might also be a gift from you to someone else. To make that happen and to help us continue the work here at God-Centered Life, just go by our website, godcenteredlife.org, click on the Donate tab, a gift of any amount, and we will send you Hidden Christmas from Tim Keller. next time we get together, these are not the things that you seek.
You see, the thing is that our whole Western society is set up to encourage us to seek happiness. But, you say, what's wrong with that? But happiness is one of those things that cannot be attained by seeking it for itself.
We'll take a look at yet another beatitude when we get together next time. GodCenteredLife.org, resources for you. And this is your warm invitation to join us for the next edition of The God-Centered Life with Josh Moody.